Okay, okay. What was the experiment we were supposed to do? What was the grand experiment you wanted to do by playing Nails off the top of the show?
I just realized something about Nails, and about specifically the Downward Spiral, which has been my running soundtrack now for, I guess, the past month and a half.
Okay,
like,
what
minute,
is it?
You know, Mr. Self-Destruct starts, like, that's usually when I start my run, and I try not to finish up until hurt, and it goes back again. I try to get right back into the becoming, and then I'm pretty much done my run. You know what I just realized? Because Greg and I were both, folks, welcome to the podcast. We were both playing Nine Inch Nails a couple of moments before the podcast started, and I just realized something. And it would be a great question of the day, but we have another question of the day, which is even funnier. Ha ha, insert the funny here. If you had to pick one album that was the soundtrack for this lockout, I think Downward Spiral would be it. Think of the name of the names of the songs. Mr. Self-Destruct, Piggy, March of the Pigs, Closer, Ruiner, I Do Not Want This, Big Man with a Gun, Eraser, The Downward Spiral, and Hurts. Like, is that not like the soundtrack for this lockout wish? Come on, work with me here.
It is. I would also proffer that if you wanted to factor in how the fans feel most of the time, you'd have to then extend it, the meme to Head Like a Hole. but no, I think you've got a point. Now the question is it like Dark Side of the Moon and The Wizard of Oz? Is there a certain point in the lockout that if you started the downward spiral, it would sync up perfectly with what's happened in the last several months?
You know what? That's really funny, because what's the opening track of Dark Side of the Moon? Speak to Me, which is what Gary Bettman tried to get Donald Fear to do going back to the All-Star game last year in Ottawa. So I think you really are on to some type of symmetry here. And let's not forget, too, the sixth cut of Dark Side of the Moon is Money. And then there's, of course, Us and Them. Brain Damage. That's another great one. You know what? Maybe the combination of the Downward Spiral and Dark Side of the Moon is the perfect soundtrack.
I like the idea
the lockout of 12-11.
The first time that you hear Donald Fear speak about the NHL lockout, that you have to sync up the playing of Mr. Self-Destruct to his voice, and then it goes from there. And then he speaks, and then Bettman speaks, and Piggy plays, and so on and so forth, until we finally get the season canceled, and then you hear the opening chords of Hurt.
Hurt or Ruiner?
Hurts,
that might be
yeah, Hurt's, Hurt's the track that plays after the season's canceled and everybody starts burning their jerseys.
Yeah, exactly.
Now listen, we're being completely nihilists here. Like, there's a reason for optimism, isn't there, on this beautiful Wednesday, Turkey Day Eve here in the States?
There's a chance. But
so you're saying there's
this
a chance.
This is going. You're saying there's a chance. It's pretty clear that yesterday on Hockey Central, Doug McLean, myself, and Brad May were talking about. It seems as if there was a gang of 12 or 12 angry men within the Players Association. And if there's 12, then there's probably about 150 silent guys that are just agreeing with them because of their spot.
We're talking about in the PA. PA. Okay,
in the Players Association, who were eager to get a deal done ASAP. Now, I don't know if these were Don Meehan guys, you know, Newport Sports, or whether they were a Pat Morris guy or whatever. But it seemed as if there was a group that was putting a lot of pressure on Donald Fear to come up with something that moved towards the owner's proposal. And clearly, that faction within the Players Association seems to be ruling the day. And that's why they came back with this proposal.
What I had heard earlier in the week was, if you remember earlier in the week, there was the meeting between the PA and the NHL. And at first, it was going to be a small meeting. It was going to be the principals in the meeting, a couple players maybe, one GM we were hearing, right? And then the whole thing got kablooey, and there was like 80,000 players that were in attendance. And what I had heard earlier in the week was there were a number of players that wanted to get their eyes and ears in that room to actually see how this thing was going down, to actually see whether or not Donald Fear was moving this thing forward or being an obstructionist. Because frankly, the noise coming out of that room sometimes, and this is from the NHL side, was that Fear wasn't negotiating, was that he was stalling. He was taking 20-minute water breaks and not really negotiating on the within the framework of what the NHL was putting out there. So
in his defense, he was really thirsty.
Right. But so you had a lot of players, including some new faces, and I'm not saying that like Vinny LeCavalier and Marty Saint-Louis are a party to this somewhat mutinous behavior, But you had a lot of people in that meeting on Monday that you had more than you thought you'd have. And I'm wondering whether or not that was also tying into this thing where you've got some players that are a little concerned about the way the process is playing out. And now all of a sudden you get a bunch of new voices in the process, and now you got yourself significant movement. Now, listen. We talk about significant movement. As we do the podcast today, the NHLPA has made a proposal. They have decided to go from a fixed amount of money they're seeking insofar as compensation from the National Hockey League insofar as their percentage of the revenue to a sort of linked percentage thing, which is what the NHL was looking for. And that's a big philosophical shift for the NHLPA. Now what you got is, okay, we can applaud that. We can feel good about that. There's been progress made on that score. They're kind of speaking in the same language now. And now, Jeff Merrick, comes the hard part, which is the money. That's the real hard part, man.
We'll see who's steering the ship on the ownership side. Like, it's clear, like, the, if you can use hawks and doves, I hate that analogy, but whatever. The doves are more carrying the day for the Players Association. We'll see who's carrying the day for the NHL. That's what it really comes down to. Because, you know, if you're negotiating this against Jeremy Jacobs, Ted Leonsis, then no chance. This thing is going to be shot down out of the sky and this bird's going to fall fast. But if you're talking to some more of the moderates, I never thought I'd say this, Ed Snyder, maybe this does have a chance.
Yeah, indeed.
But I don't think it does though.
I don't know. So here, the money thing right now is this. According to the NHLPA's proposal, which by the way was published on TSN.ca, so good to see them getting in the players' corner. Wow. According to the PA's proposal, you have a situation where they're saying that it is now undisputed that the gap is only $182 million over 5 years. This is according to their movement on the issue of a fixed amount of money versus percentage. It's now undisputed, Merrick, that the gap is only $182 million over 5 years. Undisputed by the NHLPA's numbers. Undisputed by
yes.
Alan Walsh's numbers. Not probably undisputed by the NHL's numbers, which are, as people, I believe it was, who was it, Pat Moynihan maybe, who once said that you're not allowed to have ownership of your own set of facts. It seems as though both sides have ownership of their own set of facts, and I would not be surprised in the least when we hear from the National Hockey League that we'll be hearing something along the lines of $182 million is a fictitious number in our according to our math.
There's that. I want to get back to the math thing for a second, but when does this this proposed CBA expire?
Well, they say it's a 5-year term. I think they said, right?
It expires 2017.
Okay.
You know what also happens in 2017? It is the 100-year anniversary of the National Hockey League. If you think the NHL is going to green light the expiration of a CBA on the 100th anniversary, I mean, it is a very smart play by the Players Association and Donald Fehr because it puts all the advantage and takes out the lockout option from owners, because there's no way they're going to lock out on the 100-year anniversary of the National Hockey League, bro. It totally removes that equation. So I can't see that flying. The expiration is probably a non-starter for the National Hockey League. Wouldn't you agree?
I love that idea. And I love the idea of them striking that year.
Oh, my God.
They wouldn't.
But what they want.
Wrath of Khan quoting Shakespeare, from hell's heart I stabbeth thee. Oh, that'd be beautiful.
I couldn't. There's not a chance. But it does greatly reduce the owner's ability to use the lockout tactic once again, which we all know they will once this CBA expires, whenever that may be.
Now, okay, so this is all great, and again, I think that there is enough in the PA's offer, both philosophically and both in hard numbers and actual movement, that you can feel good that maybe this is something that's negotiable, and that's all you're looking for at this point. No one is looking for a Thanksgiving miracle. It's not going to happen. At least I don't think so. Maybe by the time you hear this podcast on your long drive to grandma's house on Thursday, we have a season. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen this quickly. What you're hoping for is there's enough here to keep the momentum going and keep the talks going. And I think there is. Now, what gives you pause is the fact that this proposal was published at all before the NHL said anything about it. If you remember the NHLPA, they were quite cross, Jeff Merrick. They had grumpy pants, grumpy face about the proposal for the NHL being put online. How dare they? How dare they? But wow, beyond the pale. An insult to the negotiating process. And yet here is the NHLPA putting their proposal online. Not only that, but if you look at it, this is the best part. They actually list like several different things that are in the proposal. And in parentheses, Donald Fehr has written, move in the owner's direction. Move in the owner's direction.
Yeah, I know.
Move in the owner's direction. On like a few of them. Just to make sure that you know that this proposal is a move in the owner's direction.
Well, again, it's more public pressure, right? That's part of the tactic. And that was part of the tactic when the National Hockey League put their proposal online, put the entire thing up. It's part of the gamesmanship of all of this, right? And also it does is it completely removes any fabrication. Like, would they have to do this if Twitter didn't exist? Like, honestly.
Would they have to?
Like, how many different reports did you see about the CBA on Twitter today?
No, that's a fair point, I think. That's a fair point. I get what you're saying insofar as, like, but wasn't that the NHL's argument, too? Wasn't the NHL's argument as well, that, like, there's too many leaks?
And you don't want the other side to be able to define what you're submitting, right? You don't want them to be able to define your agenda. You just put it out there. Here's what we offered today.
According to Bob McKenzie, if his math is correct on the NHLPA's proposal, what we're looking at is their percentage of revenue is a shade over 55% in year one, a shade under 54% in year two, 52% in year three, 50.3% in year four. And he writes, keep in mind the make-whole money is deferred by 1 year, but if you apply $182 million to year one, the $128 million to year two, those are the rough numbers. So, again, if you're going by those percentages, it's not going to be palatable to the National Hockey League, which wants to jump down to 50% in year one. But I think that –
So they want the 50% and that includes the make-whole provision? Well, then it's not really 50%.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know.
I mean, if 50% plus make-whole, of course, is going to be over 50%.
There's
but that's
a lot
what it comes down to. Owners want 50% right now and want immediate cash back, and the players are saying, hold on a second here, live up to the contract that you signed in the summer.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's lots of like in this. We'll get to a bit more of it in a second, but we have to get the intros, yes?
Ah, sure, why not, eh? Let's do it.
All right, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Everything else just sounds like...
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
It's a brand new podcast.
Debate hockey.
I don't touch salmon at all.
That's refreshing.
Pop culture.
I can dig it. Can you dig it?
And more hockey.
I fought a Rottweiler and you got blocked by Ryan Whitney.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we?
And let's start the show with a bit. Hey, Wish.
Oh.
Guess what?
Yes.
Me and Josh, and by me and Josh, I mean, well, mainly Josh, because he did all the heavy lifting. All I said was, hey, Josh, how about we do this? Put a little something together for you that I think we should bust out every now and then, when appropriate, here on the podcast. And it comes from something we discussed very briefly on the last podcast. It is a new feature with production and everything. Like, we're big time now, Wish, you know? We could have a podcast award in our horizon. It's time to step up our game. It's time to, you know, really polish this stone here, make it nice and shiny. It's a new feature, and we even have a very sexy voice to intro it. Josh, let's begin the new feature for Greg Wyshynski, shall we?
It's time for Things Greg Wyshynski Has Put in His Mouth.
Always ask someone you love before you put anything in your mouth.
Don't you put it in your mouth. Don't you put it in your mouth. Don't you stuff it in your face. Don't stuff it in your face.
Now, your hosts, Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski.
Thank you very much. Now on
in your mouth. On
American very good on this American Thanksgiving weekend, it is only appropriate that we document properly and for history. This will be dug up one day. What you have put in your mouth so far? Since now you're in New Jersey now. I spoke to your father this morning. Wonderful man, big fan of the program as you mentioned. And good guy on the road to recovery. Hope he enjoys maybe a taste of the grape this weekend. Maybe the odd
mug
of something.
Suds as well. A lot of suds.
All right. Attaboy, Bob. Get right in there. But it's probably important for us to document what you've put in your mouth so far on this Thanksgiving weekend. Wish, what have you put in your mouth?
So far, I've put in my mouth Taco Bell on the drive up last night, a 7-plus-hour drive from Virginia to wow. New Jersey. I would put it at about 7 cookies in my mouth, chewy Chips Ahoy, chunky Chips Ahoy. I put a ring ding in my mouth. I put a pretzel rod in my mouth.
What's a ring ding?
A ring ding's like the hockey puck. It's like a king don. It's like the hockey puck. Yeah, it's a the hard chocolate shell. And then a chocolate cake and then cream inside of it. Okay. You know, like that's a ring ding. Tomorrow will be deviled eggs, turkey, lots of turkey, stuffing, turkey skin, corn, biscuits. Probably I would put it at about 6 biscuits. I would put it at about 7 beers, a little bit of wine, pumpkin pie. I will put probably some sort of ham in my mouth. And then after all of it's done at around 10 o'clock tomorrow night, before I head out to Best Buy to get on the Black Friday line, I will put in my mouth, Jeff Merrick, the Wyszynski traditional Thanksgiving leftover sandwich, which is 2 slices of white bread, a smattering of stuffing, almost like it's a condiment in and of itself. On one of the slices of white bread, by the way, this is toasted white bread. Slathering of mayo, very, very thin slathering of mayo. So mayo stuffing, and then, of course, the cold turkey on the sandwich between 2 toasted pieces of white bread. Essential to toast the white bread, Jeff Merrick, or else you don't have that wonderful contrast in temperatures. So those are the things that I will be putting in my mouth.
Well, congratulations. And how much weight do you expect to gain this weekend?
17 pounds, give or
take.
Not
bad. And here's the reason I ask. A buddy of mine, Matt, and his brother, have I told you this story about what they do for Super Bowl and Grey Cup? And they'd be doing it, I guess, this weekend because it's Grey Cup weekend.
I don't know.
Here's what they do for their Super Bowl / Grey Cup parties. They get about 15 guys together. They each throw in $100. And they put out the big spread, the chili and the chips and the very beer, like the whole deal, right? What you'd expect at a Super Bowl or Grey Cup party. And before opening kickoff, everybody weighs themselves. At opening kickoff, they start gorging themselves. And at the end of the game, everybody gets back on the scale. Whoever has put on the most weight takes the entire pot. It's usually about $1,200, $1,300. And I think the record is 11 pounds over the course of a football game. Yeah, bro. Yep. That's high rent district. I can't hang there. I would explode. Oh, there's no way I could handle that. But you should see these guys put it back.
Couple of things here on the proposal. By the way, Ian Mendez is going to be hopping on the line pretty soon from Sportsnet. A man who knows a thing or two about the CBA negotiations. A couple of things. The waivers situation in this proposal, and this is something that evidently both sides have agreed upon, the end of reentry waivers, Merrick. No more reentry waivers in the National Hockey League. Looks like it's going to be the next CBA.
Yeah, that way teams aren't on the hook for half and guys can find their way back into the National Hockey League. I mean, how many times have we seen a player who's just buried in the American Hockey League because they know that they'll lose them on reentry and have half of that salary count against the cap? So,
I like that one.
It keeps NHLers in the game. It keeps guys that belong in the NHL in the NHL. That I like. I hate this idea that, oh, the only reason this guy's not in the NHL is because of the waiver wire. Oh, it drives me nuts.
Right. Right. Exactly. Or the fallacy of the idea that, you know, you're going to put them through and someone's going to claim. No one will. It's a broken system in that regard, so I'm happy they're getting rid of them. Supplemental discipline. And this is something that the Toronto Star reported has been agreed upon as well on both sides, so expect this. For on-ice discipline, there will be an appeal to a neutral arbitrator or to a panel of 3 arbitrators, 1 appointed by each side and 1 neutral. The standard of review will be whether the league's finding of a violation of the league's playing rules was supported by substantial evidence, and if so, whether the penalty imposed was within the league's reasonable discretion and consistent with past practice. For off-ice discipline, there will be an appeal to the impartial arbitrator. The issue will be whether the discipline was for just cause. Now, in the proposal, and I imagine this will be something that will be hammered out in the actual CBA, there's no fail-safe for, let's say, length of suspension that can be appealed. And that's my big concern with the system. Like, I'm fine getting rid of Gary Bettman as the appellate court of the National Hockey League for discipline. But don't start doing this shit for a two-gamer.
Two games. Yeah,
oh, my God. Come on.
I think
if you're going to do that, if you're going to do that, you might as well just take a pair of hedge clippers now and just snip off Brendan Shanahan's nuts. Because he won't have any if you're going to do it for a two-game suspension.
A couple things. One, I agree, and I think the threshold for me should be five games. Five and above, I think you can appeal if you're the National Hockey League Players Association. But man, do you want to talk about like how political the nomination of this third party is going to be? Mm-hmm. Or is the third party board? Like who's going to sit on this? Who's going to name these people?
Who will be seen as somebody who's a player's guy or an owner's guy or girl? I should extend it to women as well. Actually, that's a great idea. You know what? Honestly, let's go female. Let's get a female on the board. Mandatory female on the board for appeals.
Angela Ruggiero
and a player.
Cassie Campbell.
And they're
Cassie
players.
Campbell. Marian Ilitch.
Oh, I love that. Oh, why do I love the idea of there being a three-woman panel for appeals?
Three-woman panel to decide. Okay, so Ellen Etchingham, Marian Ilitch, and who should the other one be? I think you have to have a player.
Now, would Ellen be a player's person, or would she be a neutral party?
She would be neutral party. Should you have a media member on that panel? Should you have somebody from the Professional Hockey Writers Association? Should you be on that panel, Greg?
No. Now I'll tell you why. Because I probably wouldn't take it as seriously as necessary. The guy who should be on there is Damian Cox because he hates everything.
Oh man, there'd be no game. There would be no game. Everyone would be suspended. Let's get to our guest. Ian Mendez, who is standing by and has been waiting patiently for us to get over our little silliness here. In New York, covering the collective bargaining agreement sessions, Ian Mendez of Sportsnet joins us now. Ian, what is the time and temperature right now in New York City vis-a-vis the CBA negotiations? Where are we at with regards to where what the owners think of this proposal? Do we know yet?
Well, no, we don't. And I guess the one, if you want to hang on a shred of optimism here, it's that the PA walked in at about 1:25 or so Eastern time. We're now closing in on about an hour. And if you recall, you know, the one time where the league kind of stormed out and rejected a proposal, that was within minutes. And I think, you know, the fact that they're meeting, you know, for an hour here, it's probably a good thing. And basically the way things went today, guys, was they walked in at 10:30, they walked out around noon and said, we submitted the proposal, we think we've made a significant move towards the owners, the league wants to look at things, and so basically the league has had this in their hands now for 3 hours or 4 hours, and you know, we're just basically in a waiting game here, waiting to see when Donald Fear and the NHLPA will walk down the stairs and come out onto the street here and kind of maybe give us a sense of how the owners received that proposal.
Aren't you a little concerned that the proposal is now also in the hands of the media and the general public? Like, I did not think that they'd release the proposal, at least until way later in the process, but here it is on both TSN and ESPN and other sites right now.
Yeah, and, you know, my concern is when you see stuff leak like that, it's done for one reason. It's so that the fan out there, and obviously us in the media too, will get the proposal and see exactly what the NHL is about to reject. And so if you're the PA, you can spin this in a number of different ways. And you can, the obvious spin is, and this is what they've tried to put on it, is we've made significant concessions and a significant move towards the owners. So if you're the average fan at home and you're reading Twitter or you're, you know, kind of paying attention to, you know, media outlets and you're hearing, oh, they made a significant move, and then you see the proposal and you're like, ah, you know what, that seems pretty reasonable to me, you should have started to mentally start to side with the players. So again, you got to take everything with a grain of salt. And while I was somewhat optimistic that Donald Fear said that, you know, we've moved more than halfway, we've made moves, to me, I'm not going to have any optimism or even pessimism for that, man. I'm going to have none of it until you hear back from the owners. And again, we're sort of in a waiting game and a pattern and a holding pattern for that. But to me, I don't like it. I don't like it when things get released and leaked like that, especially in their entirety, because you know, I think that sometimes that disrupts the process. But also, that being said, the note that Donald Fear sent around, that's going to 700 players, and I think it's pretty hard to stop you know, something from being leaked when you're sending it to in excess of 500 or 600 members, the owners probably have a little bit better control on things because they're not sending it to as many people.
Is there enough here? Is there enough here for the owners to negotiate off of this proposal, or do you think, based on your experience and knowledge of the people across the table from Donald Fear, this will just be outright rejected and will be forced both sides to scramble back to the drawing board?
Well, and this is a great question. I don't think any of us expect that, you know, Donald Fear and company would hand the proposal over to the owners today, and the Board of Governors would look at that and say, yeah, you know what, done deal. But I do think what we're all hoping is that they're now talking the same language, and that that if the players are willing to get off their demands for hard dollars and move to a percentage linkage of HRR, that that's a step in the right direction. I think that I still think that the guys, that the big issue here is going to be who pays for the lockout. And I think the players are steadfastly saying, you imposed this lockout, you created this lockout, so our percentage of the pie, you know, in year one of the lockout is something that we should have protected, that you caused that. And obviously the owners are saying, well, no, this is a two-party issue, and that the lockout is something that hurt the entire business, and, you know, the players shouldn't be immune to that. To me, that's as big a hurdle in this whole thing as anything, is how they're going to get past year one and how to prorate things. And I think there's enough in there at the very least to start a conversation, but I certainly don't think there's enough in there for the owners to start looking at each other and saying, you know what, I think we got the framework of a deal.
Ian Mendez of Sportsnet joining us here on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. The question for me, though, is like, so there's been movement, and we've not had significant movement in a few weeks now on this CBA negotiation. So the question is, who blinked? You know, is this the PA putting a proposal out there knowing that there's pressure on Bettman to make a deal? Or is this pressure coming from internally in the PA to try to get a deal done, and hence Fear has to come off the guaranteed fixed money and go to a percentage situation? Where do you think the pressure's coming from in this situation?
You know what? That's a great question. And I apologize because your phone kind of broke up on me, but I think your question was about the pressure and where it kind of comes from, so I'll assume, guys, sorry if that's
true.
That's kind of what you guys asked, but to me, this is what's really disconcerting. It is for hockey fans and the media is, I think for us, we're all just saying, hey guys, make a deal. But I think if you're the NHLPA, your intention isn't to just make a deal, it's to make the best deal. And I think if you're the owners, it's the same thing. It's to make a deal. I'm not sure we've reached the pressure point, and that's the scary thing, is that I don't think they necessarily take into account how much damage has been done to the business. And I think that if they can do a deal now, you can still probably salvage a 60-game season. I think you could probably salvage a fan base. But I think if you drag this thing into Christmas, even though you think as a negotiator that you're going to get a better deal with a better leverage or something like that in Christmas time, to me, the pressure here to make a deal should be now. But I think it's all artificial. I really do. I think until the real pressure point to me in this negotiation will come if and when the owners set a drop dead date for the cancellation of the season. And I think once they draw a line in the sand, and I don't anticipate the next round of cancellations, which I would think would be, you know, kind of December 1st to 15th or something, or up till Christmas, I don't think they're going to threaten to cancel the season at that point. I think the next round of cancellations after that would be the time that they say, we're prepared to cancel the season. And that might be the thing that gets the players thinking and gets the players a little bit antsy. And I don't know if that's the pressure point that's needed. And to me, I still think both sides don't really feel the pressure, because I don't think even though there was the story that was out in the Philly paper this weekend about, you know, Ed Snyder's not happy, I still don't think that there's enough discord on either side to say that there's a pressure from either side to get a deal done right now.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going to go with the next question, Ian. It's clear that it is a quote-unquote softer faction that led to this offer being made from the Players Association. Call them dubs, call them moderates, whatever you may call them. But do we know that there's enough, to your point, enough moderates on the other side that this can actually get things rolling? Or are we still dealing with the hammer that is Jeremy Jacobs, Ted Leonsis, Craig Leopold?
Yeah, and that's the question, is that will, if indeed the moderates on this side got things done for the PA. Will there be enough moderates at the table? That's a great question, and that's, again, where I think the Ed Snyder story that broke on the weekend is great, because then you get the sense that if teams like Philadelphia and the Pittsburgh Penguins, we already know that the Rangers, are steadfast against this lockout. We believe that the Maple Leafs and the Vancouver Canucks and these teams would like to be playing again. You would think that if there's enough owners on that side that are just, have enough muscle, and I think Philadelphia is one of those teams that can carry the weight. Lou Lamoriello used to be a guy that I think probably, as much as Lou had the reputation of being a hardliner, was somewhat of a voice of reason. And I wonder if, Lou's, he was one of the main guys that circumvented the cap in the Kovalchuk deal. He's one of the guys that might be on the outside looking in. And that's the concern, is that there's not enough voices of reason that, you hear from everybody that this is, Jeremy Jacobs. And when you hear these stories of how the meetings are unfolding, that, Jeremy Jacobs will lean over and whisper something in Gary Bettman's ear. That makes you shudder. It makes you think that the moderates don't have a chance. And it does appear to me that the moderates had a hand in crafting a part of the PA proposal that we saw today. And just, you're right, we got to keep our fingers crossed. I'm not overly optimistic from that perspective. The only thing that I do hope is that, like I said, that maybe this can get a little bit of traction. That I'm not anticipating that the owners will say this is exactly what we want or a framework, but I would like to think that now we get into a little bit more of a tennis match where you volley back and forth rather than this, start for a week, stop, bicker back and forth, get back together for 2 days, stop. This would actually be something that maybe has a little bit of momentum.
Well, let's hope so. And we are kind of getting down to 0 hour. Dollars to donuts, sir. What do you think a length of season could be if we actually get this thing done in the next couple of weeks? Do you think they'd manage to squeeze in 70 games? Do you think it'd be shorter than that? Hello, hello?
I think we may have lost Ian.
Oh. Sorry, hey, Ian?
I got you guys, but for some reason I can't. You know what? Your phone's cutting in and out, and it must be the fact that we're on a New York sidewalk here that makes it impossible for me to hear you.
Well, you know what? We should let Ian get back to staking out the headquarters there. Ian, thanks, bud, for doing this, and we'll probably talk to you on Hockey Central later.
Okay, guys. Have a great day. Thanks for having me on.
Ian Mendez from Sportsnet, checking out the action.
New York doesn't really accept the Canadian cellular phone. It's not there. The towers are completely incompatible with your alien technology.
So our Rogers Blackberries aren't going to be able work as profoundly as your American iPhones.
All those cell phone towers disguised as skyscrapers simply can't process the alien Canadian technology. It's mostly because of the metric system, I think. But
is that right? You guys don't have you guys are going to be you're the last holdout.
That's true.
The United States. You're like that. Post World War II Japanese soldier you find on a deserted island who still thinks the war is on. Meanwhile, it's 1966.
That's us.
That's kind of like what the U.S. is like with the metric system. It's okay, guys. It doesn't hurt. It's okay.
Our signals are measured in inches and not centimeters, so it's hard to.
Gallons versus liters. Come on, guys. Come on. The rest of the world. Catch up.
Tyler Dello points out something about the PA's proposal today that's interesting.
What's that?
With regard to the fact is that the players don't ever want their share to drop. In other words, beginning with the second year of the agreement, players' share expressed in dollars may not fall below its value for the prior season. This proposal allows us to determine the player's share regardless of the effects of the lockout and its aftermath. What if things go off the rails for the NHL revenue-wise?
What do you mean? If it really goes into the ditch? I don't see how it could. But, yeah, and the one thing the NHL doesn't want to do is guarantee dollars to the Players Association, even though they were the ones saying they needed cost certainty in 2014. All the players are saying is we want revenue certainty. That's one thing the NHL is going to look at and say, not a chance.
Here's Dello. In other words, if revenues ever do shrink, the players will make more than the 50-50 that the NHL is after. The NHLPA has moved away from their initial proposal here, which was a hard number of dollars, but only partly. What they're saying is that they'll take a hard number of dollars, but rather than expressing that number as X number of dollars, it becomes a number that will be defined by whatever the NHL pulls in the next year. Their share can never be less than 50% of that amount. It is therefore a move away from the linkage that the NHL fought so hard for in 2004. So correct. Leave it to a smarty pants like Dello to get to the heart of the matter, which is that in this proposal, based on that man, what the PA is looking for with regard to their percentage being guaranteed year to year that it's not going to drop, if it's a move away from linkage, then it's kind of an end around against the salary cap from Donald Fehr, isn't it?
Yes, and it also may be a tip-off to something that if the season is scrubbed, I firmly believe the NHLPA will go after, and that's the cap itself. Right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's saying that these proposals are all secret code to the other side. I mean, that's Gary Bettman talk, sir. That's why the NHL came out with that shit-tastic proposal back in July. That was just to let the players know that it's going to be 50-50 eventually.
Okay, well then, by that philosophy then, the proposal from the Players Association clearly is not actually what they believe that they're going to get, but the place in which they're going to start negotiating from, eventually getting to the place that they all agree they're going to get to. Right, Gary? Or does the NHL just say, nope, no thanks, go back and try it again? Like, I think, you know, putting this online, the way this has been framed, the way this has been positioned, you know, with the parentheses, move towards the owners on every single line, I mean, really what this does is curry favor publicly, and it makes it challenging for the National Hockey League to not do anything with it and just reject it offhand. Like, can they honestly, Greg, can they really at the end of today come out and say, nope, not interested, try again, come back tomorrow, come back with another offer?
They can, because they don't care about public opinion. I mean, they do in the sense that they focus group it, but I don't think in this case that they really care. When it comes to rejecting a proposal, I think they'll do it outright. You're saying you think this PA proposal comes so far to the middle that the NHL couldn't possibly propose it. Couldn't possibly reject it without coming off as a bunch of dicks.
No, I'm saying that don't you think that there's enough in there that the owners can drag them a little bit more to their side of things?
Oh no, I think there is, but I also think that if the NHL just walked out and said, "Nah, not good enough. We'll both return to our corners and talk it over for the weekend." You know, that's I don't know. I can see them doing it, right?
At this point, I can see anything happening. Really,
I can see the
hammer swinging, and I'm just saying, no, tear it up, come back again, little boy.
The question of the day, as we talk to you on this Turkey Day Eve, here in the States. The NHL, as you know, had a float in the Thanksgiving Day parade many moons ago. What do you think that float would look like in 2012? What would be the National Hockey League Thanksgiving Day Parade float in 2012? PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. At Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick, on the Twitter, hashtag at MVSW. Jackie Berberabi. Jackie B. writes
Jesus.
In. No need to waste any of that prized hockey-related revenue on a decorative NHL float. Bettman, Fehr, and their assorted minions have been so full of hot air lately that all you need to do is attach a few strings and let them all float alongside Snoopy and the Mickey Mouse balloons. It's fitting, considering how inflated some of their heads have gotten.
This question of the day was perfectly made for the hot air comments, and we got tons of them. We got a lot of Dustin Bufflin comments on this one as well. But the answer should be kind of an obvious one. I mean, how it's not the Grinch is beyond me. Isn't that the perfect float for the National Hockey League right now?
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
Mr. Grinch.
Your lockout's gone on too long.
Or the Grabbleberry Pie Thief from the Flintstones episode where Fred starts making the Grabbleberry Pies.
What?
The Grabbleberry Pie Thief, yeah.
I must have missed that.
Do you remember
episode.
That one?
No.
When Freddy starts making the pies.
Oh, is that the one where the Freddy makes the pies and the Gravelberry
yeah.
pie thief comes and he steals the pie from on top of the garbage disposal and the pterodactyl on the side of the garbage disposal is like, eh, it's a living.
Yeah.
Was that the one?
Yes, that one. The Gravelberry pie thief. And then there's the one where Freddy goes on the diet and someone's hey, Fat Freddy, who was the guy that kept stealing all of his turkeys? Oh, would like steal all the food from Freddy when he's trying to eat.
I don't remember.
My Flintstones knowledge is really
Did he
slipped.
did he go to like Weight Rockers or Rock Watchers
Rockers.
or did he go on the Rockins diet? That's cuz it's all rocks,
about,
you see.
How about it was like if Gary was like the Sheriff of Nottingham and Robin Hood was Donald Fear and
did he drink Diet Rockter Pepper?
Paulina Gretzky was Maid Marian. That would be what I would do.
Oh, really? You're going to cast. So who's Robin Hood in this scenario?
Donald Fear. Yeah.
And Paulina Gretzky is Maid Marian. Who's Friar yeah. Tuck then? Because here's the problem. You're whatever Friar Tuck you come up with, it should
Bruce
be Bill
Boudreau.
Daly.
Bruce Boudreau. Bruce Boudreau. Come on. Who would be King John? I don't know.
Some...
Did you get Rocket Robin Hood?
Dashing looking
did you get Rocket
boob. What?
Did you get Rocket Robin Hood in the States? Did you watch that? Rocket Robin
No,
Hood?
What is that?
Futuristic Robin Hood? It's right on the time that early 1970s Spider-Man came out. It was the same animators. Early 70s Spider-Man came out. Rocket
it
Robin
took
Hood.
Place
you never
in,
had Rocket
space.
Robin Hood?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Friar Tuck with like a laser gun.
Steals space credits from the rich and gives them to the poor. Is that what it kind of was? That sort of thing?
Who do you think had the best Friar Tuck haircut in the NHL? It's like that ring.
Come gather around me, space travel surround me, hark now to the ballad of
Josh.
Rocket Robin Hood.
Space Robin Hood.
Josh is the best.
I
yes,
may
Josh.
Well confound you, astound you, spellbound you with heroes and villains, the bad and
Thank
the
God good. There's newts in space. I was worried that we wouldn't have a loot.
Watch now as our rockets race here from afar, for now with our Robin
great.
We live on a star.
Band of brothers marching I thought we were going to get like a really cool song.
The fiery blast are roaring up in rise. Beyond the earth, beyond the sky, at the side of Robin's if you stand.
You never had this wish. You never had Rocket Robin Hood.
I can say for a fact that he's going to infect our country. Wow,
yeah, man.
That's impressive.
That was good. That's our man, Josh Goldsmith, who dug up
fantastic.
That little nugget.
Did Rocket Robin Hood have a California accent like Kevin Costner's Robin Hood? Robin Loxley.
You know what this podcast has turned into during the lockout? A study of the differences between the United States and Canada.
And
that's what this is. Whether it's Rocket Robin Hood or Gordon Lightfoot. Desert Tukes, it's all become one of these kids is not like the other. It's become a Sesame Street.
Jeff
parody.
D'Souza writes in, you were deprived if you didn't get Rocket Robin Hood.
That's
best
right,
worst show ever. You know, I wouldn't say I didn't get it. I would just say I didn't get it.
You know what? You haven't lived until you've seen Friar Tuck in outer space fighting with a turkey leg in one hand. You haven't lived.
Space turkey. Evidently.
Yeah, space turkey. That's right.
Stephen O writes in, the NHL's float should be an alphabet book spelling out complicated terms like HRR and CBA for everyone to understand. The NHLPA's float should be an alphabet book spelling out the players' names from Aaron Asham to Zarly Zalapsky, # random penguins. Well done.
I know. Random penguin back.
Matthew McGreevy says the NHL float should be a giant middle finger. Peter Plebritis writes in, it should be a drawing of a turkey done by tracing around your hand like a little kid does in school, except there should only be the middle finger up to be traced around. See a common theme between those two.
How about... Jeremy Ballaston writes in, Alexander Digg... And there's another random penguin, by the way. Alexander Digg holding up the Stanley Cup, it makes about as much sense as this lockout.
Alexander Digg. He means Hockey Insider, doesn't he?
Hockey Insider.
Right. It's Alexander Digg, right?
That's what I was told.
Apparently so.
Let's see here. This is this is from Steve.
Oh, Brad, hang on. Brad Hewton, Gary Bettman doing the Call of the Union dance. That's taken on a life of its own. That Call of the Union. Harrison Mooney, God bless you.
Steve Harry Sam writes in, a giant, gigantic empty pie pan because they keep on fighting over slices of the HRR pie and soon there won't be a pie to fight for. I love the symbolic thought process in many of these answers. Very impressive. Very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
This is
Nikki Schutz. I love her. Naive as it may be, I'd like to see a freshly signed CBA on the float. Hashtag take the deal. Also, Andy Bathgate, random penguin. I think he scored the first goal in Penguins history, didn't he? Andy Bathgate scored the first goal.
Dima writes in, a banner that everyone was promised, but which the owners will roll back. Okay, because the rollbacks. No?
Yeah, you get it. You understand? Yeah. Mm. I think Grinch, man. The guy steals the presents. Who's notorious for giving something and then taking it back? I was trying to think of this today. Like, who's the
if you had asked me that question about 15 years ago, I would say an Indian. But no longer applicable in our PC society.
Can't do that. Wrong.
This is from Maya. This is for the NHL float. Two people wearing sandwich boards that say NHL and NHLPA trying to shove each other off the float.
Oh, that's not bad.
Down goes Brown. By the way, Christmas comes but once a year. Make sure that you buy Down Goes Brown's book for a stocking stuffer. How could you not have watched Rocket Robin Hood? Now I feel like everything else about you is a lie. I don't think it was on in the States. Like, as you may or may not know,
there is a shade,
and I'm putting my fingers just a few centimeters apart, a shade of age difference between myself and Jeff Merrick. I don't remember Rocket Robin Hood. Now, and I used to watch all of the shitty Hanna-Barbera cartoons, like Wacky Races and all those things. Like all the ones that are kind of obscure, like I used to watch, but I never saw Rocket Robin Hood. I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, it's a Canadian.
Right. I don't think it was in the States.
Josh says a Canadian thing. But whatever, so was Degrassi. I'm sure you know tons about Degrassi.
Well, I'd watch Degrassi because that came down to the States. Like, how could I not watch it? Taught me everything
I'm
I
sure
know about
Robin Hood was
tolerance for others that are different than me.
How about Secret Squirrel? Did you watch that?
Secret Squirrel sounds like it might have been on a pay-per-view channel that my parents wouldn't let me watch. what is Secret Squirrel like a secret agent one?
Yeah, it's a squirrel. See? This, you know what? We've already done country gap between us, the difference between Canada and now we're doing age gap. I find that Secret Squirrel is the one divider between me and a lot of people.
I
remember watching
Secret Squirrel.
Yeah, man. Go to YouTube. Go to YouTube, Secret Squirrel.
I just have a feeling that maybe these are shows that never crossed
the
border.
Dude?
Maybe they got caught up in customs or something. I don't remember Secret Squirrel.
Secret Squirrel never get caught up in customs. Dude, it was too short.
Here's Karen Douglas. I remember Rocket Robin Hood. So you
Thank
are
you, Karen.
Way too young. I know nothing about Degrassi. So perhaps you and Karen are both in the sweet spot of knowing Rocket Robin Hood but not being all that familiar with Degrassi.
I watched Degrassi tons. A buddy of mine's in the second Degrassi, Tom Melissus.
Oh, here you go. Oh, listen to this. Degrassi. Okay.
What
now in your defense, okay, because I just looked it up, it appears as though the Secret Squirrel show ran from 1965 to 1967 and was a Hanna-Barbera production. Let me ask you if you remember any of these character names. Secret Squirrel obviously is your hero. He's your face, the white hat, if you will. Do you remember Morocco Mole?
Yes, I remember Morocco Mole.
Do you remember Chief Winchley, who I imagine is probably Secret Squirrel's superior?
No, don't remember it that well.
What if I was to give you this name? A round-headed, sailor-hatted squid named Squiddly Diddly.
Oh, of course, yeah. But Squiddly Diddly was all over the place. Squiddly Diddly, I don't think, was just unique to the squirrel, was he?
He was a friend of the squirrel, of Secret Squirrel.
Yeah, but he wasn't just on Secret Squirrel.
He was much more octopus than squid in appearance, but he was a captive in an aquatic park known as Bubble Land, and he resided in a pool with his name on it. Type with Secret Squirrel. Actually, he had his own segment on the Adam Ant Secret Squirrel show, which I imagine was some kind of Avengers-level superhero team-up between endearing characters back in the day.
You see, I didn't see it on first run. This must have, yeah, I know, we're learning a lot on this podcast today.
Paul
all
Vogel,
these things I saw, not first run, though.
Paul Vogel writes in about Secret Squirrel. I am a 25-year-old American, and I love Secret Squirrel. It's awesome, as is Morocco Mole. So Vogel knows Secret Squirrel.
He's on to it. He's hip.
Merrick, you seem like the only person alive who could answer this question. Throw down, two men enter, one man leaves.
Yep.
Who wins a fight between Secret Squirrel and Rocket Robin Hood? Was Rocket Robin Hood a human, or was he like a fox? Like
yes. Rocket Robin Hood was a human. Secret Squirrel was trickier, was craftier, but as far as just physical power, to say nothing of weapons, I think Robin Hood's got him licked.
I think I would put my money on Secret Squirrel for one reason.
Why?
And that reason is, sir, that Robin Hood, and this goes for any incarnation of Robin Hood, Kevin Costner Robin Hood, dude who looks like a fox Robin Hood, Russell Crowe Robin Hood, Rocket Robin Hood. At the end of the day, Robin Hood is blinded by the punani. The whole thing is a way for him to get Maid Marian. And I've often thought that this entire I'm going to steal from the rich and give to the poor was either a clever ruse to obscure the fact that he's all about the punani, or it's a way to impress the woman he's trying to rescue. So at the end of the day, Jeff Merrick, I would choose I'd probably guess is an asexual squirrel, and also a secret agent, over a futuristic Robin Hood who is blinded by his lust for Maid Marian.
Really? So Robin Hood was just all roads lead to pink, and Secret Squirrel was legit. He was like, no, man, I'm all business. All right.
Rocket Robin Hood was someone who was on a campaign to impress a lady, but Secret Squirrel lived the job. And at the end of the day, you always doing the job for ulterior motives.
I don't want to talk smack about Secret Squirrel. As a matter of fact, when TJ was born, Claire had a Secret Squirrel onesie made for him. It was the first onesie that TJ wore. So I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for the Secret Squirrel.
One of the first onesies that Vivian wore
was courtesy. I was going to say it's funny because this is during the last lockout. One of the guys I used to speak to regularly to get lockout updates from the inside is hilarious. He used to call me, on my cell phone and he'd say, Jeff, this is the Secret Squirrel. Here's the latest. I just remember that now. Jeff, it's the Secret Squirrel.
I just remember that.
A lot of reasons why I like the Secret Squirrel.
True story. One of the first onesies that Vivian ever wore was courtesy of my friend Dave Britton down in Florida. Mm-hmm. It was a custom-made Thor Viking Stad onesie from the
Olympics. From the Olympics. Oh,
yes. How beautiful is that?
That's really
Thor
cool.
Viking Stad.
Awesome. Please tell me you documented this photographically.
I think I did, and I think I still own it, so it'll always be in the family.
Which I just realized is a pretentious way of saying, please tell me you took a picture.
Please tell me please. you documented this photographically.
What a jackass. Hey, let me ask you a question. You think I'm an asshole?
Why? I mean, you're going to have to be more specific as to why
I'm
going to
be.
Asshole.
I will be a little more pacific, as we say in the Atlantic. I got a
there
direct
it is.
Message
yes,
from
Seth. Actually,
thank you,
to
thank
answer
you.
Your question, yes, you are an asshole for always using the Pacific Atlantic joke in these instances.
By the way, the table, Mabel.
Hold on. Did you see that there is now a Robot Merrick Twitter feed?
What? Oh, get lost.
Is there? I can't believe I didn't send this to you yesterday. Yeah. So much in tradition of Hologram Bill Masterton, another bit from the show has gained its own life on Twitter. There is a Robot Merrick Twitter feed now, at Robot Merrick. And in fact, at did Robot make Jeff a. Merrick. Is it Robot
at
Jeff
Robot
Merrick?
Jeff.
Okay, so it's at Jesus, Robot Jeff Merrick. And it isn't. They in fact did reference the Atlantic Pacific joke, I believe, in last week.
Oh my God.
Robot Jeff Merrick. Anyway, why do I think you're an asshole?
Oh my God, this is awesome. Oh, I'm so following Robot. I'm so following Robot Me. Wow, this is great. Because I got a direct message from a guy who does a podcast, and you know me, Wish. I mean, I think you and I are pretty much the same. If anyone asks you to do their podcast or to, you know, if there's like a student, who wants help on a project or is, you know, doing something and wants your advice, like, I just do. It's like, I think it's important that, you know, cause a lot of people help me up along the way that, you know, I just never say no. I'm just a gal who can't say no. Greg Wyszynski, that's all I am. Just a gal who can't say no. Okay, so I'm direct messaging with this dude. And he says, well, we do all of our interviews over Skype. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't really use Skype. I don't have it on my Mac. And he says, well, we do them all on Skype. Can you just download the Skype app, onto your BlackBerry or onto your smartphone and we can do it then? And I sent him back, said, I'm really not interested in downloading, Skype onto my BlackBerry just for one interview. Sorry. I'll do it over the phone. But he said, no, we do it all over Skype. And I thought, am I a jerk for doing that? Like, should I have just like, gone the extra mile or whatever, downloaded Skype onto my BlackBerry and just done the interview? Like, was that a moment of, was I big timing at that point? Was I being a big timer at that?
I don't think you're necessarily big time. I don't think, if the question is whether that move makes you an asshole, I don't think it does. I think that's a lot to ask for to get an interview done. I mean, I think we both would probably just prefer to pick up the phone and do the interview that way. So, I downloading apps and the whole thing is a little bit much. But let me ask you this. If he had simply said, call into this number at this time, would you have done it?
Yeah, totally. Of course.
Yeah, so you're not an asshole. You're not big time at anybody.
All right.
Unless you were after... like, yes, I'll call into that number as long as you send a car to take me to a luxury hotel where I can then use their phone to call you. I mean, that would be big time, I'm pretty sure.
And
or, as they say, as I like to say, someone who works in television.
Oh, dude, I'm close. You know me. I'm closer to radio than I am TV. Trust me. I'm just fake. Trust me. Anyone who knows me, and if you hear me on this podcast, and like you'll watch me on Hockey Central tonight, if you're watching Sports Night, working with McLean and May tonight, you'd be like, that dude's totally different on the podcast than he is on TV. Well, it's true, because in a lot of ways, it's kind of playing a role, playing the role of a host, playing Denny the Dunce, setting things up. So, Doug McLean, what can we infer from this negotiation today in New York City between the PA and the NHL? Does this give us hope? Do we have reason for optimism?
By the way,
when you're on TV, you feel like a fraud. Anyway, I do sometimes.
Well, you know, my thing with TV was always that, like, I'm a pretty verbose dude, as anyone who listens to the podcast knows. And the whole soundbitey nature of television is something I don't like. Like, that's why I loved the War Room. What the hell did you guys call it?
Strategy Room, bro.
Yeah. I love that because the conversation was so freeform and it wasn't as if these guys were watching the clock to see, you know, if they could fit in their story into 8 seconds. Like, that's the kind of TV that I dig, is something that feels like it's organic and it's a conversation. And I mean, the sitting at a desk and speaking into the camera for 10 seconds, between periods of a hockey game and then trying to be as controversial as you possibly can. Patrick Marleau, blah, 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 blah. You know, that kind of shit. Like, I don't know if I could ever do that.
You know what I mean? I like the most fun that I've had in TV is doing Strategy Room. Just for that, I love the way it's shot. Like, everything is over the shoulder. No one's looking at the camera. You're looking to each other. You're across the desk. The only guy that's supposed to look at a camera is me, just for an establishing shot. But after that, it's just over the shoulder shooting. And you're right. And it's just conversation. It's back and forth. TV is always, in a lot of ways, at its best when it's really, really simple. And that's a really simple concept. Here's a table. Put two guys on one side, two guys on the other side, maybe someone in the middle to say, welcome back to the program, and we'll be right back. That would be yours truly. Thank you very much. And I think you got yourself a really nice show. I really do. That's why I love the Strategy Room. I think it's something we should do more of if the season ever starts in the NHL.
Yeah, exactly. My Thanksgiving float idea for the NHL, by the way, would be to gather all of the alumni players that would have been in the Winter Classic alumni games, all the Red Wings and all the Leafs, and I would have them sing two songs. I would have them sing a mournful rendition of Madonna's This Used to Be My Playground on a set that looks just like the Winter Classic rink. And then I would have them all sing Always Look on the Bright Side of Life with whistling. With whistling through what teeth they still have.
Always look on.
Mainly for
that
the
was the highlight of the Olympics. Were you there for closing ceremonies? Were you there closing ceremonies? Yeah, Bobby Clark would be great.
Were you there closing ceremonies? You mean in London, right?
Yeah.
No. I watched it, but I wasn't in the building for it.
That was my favorite part.
Eric Idle showed up.
God, he was great. That was. Hey, you know what? You know we do a lot of goofiness on this podcast, as you all know. I want to play some for you. I was going through some files yesterday, and I came across something from the last lockout. This is when I was doing the Leafs Lunch radio show with Bill Waters. Because Billy was effing hilarious, and still is to this day. We did this little bit going to break about cider. It takes a while to sink in. I want to see if you get this. This is a younger Jeff Merrick, host of Leafs Lunch, then on AM 640, along with Bill Waters, talking about, we go on different tangents about Secret Squirrel. Yeah, this one is about cider. I sent this over to Josh a while ago. All right, play it, Josh.
Hey, how'd you like that cider that Ryan brought last week?
Oh, hey, listen, Jeffy, when I was a kid, and Ryan's cider was outstanding, but when I was a boy, there was a cider in Orillia called Dickens that I loved. It was very, very good.
You still like it?
But I mean, Ryan's is very nice, but Dickens cider was a wonderful drink.
Stay tuned. Greg Gilbert, head coach of the Marlies, joins us next.
Yeah, nothing like Dickens cider. It's really good cider.
Well, when you're younger.
Dickens.
When you're younger, Dickens cider is something you have with frequency.
You don't have it a lot when you're younger, right? When you're just like in your teens and stuff. Have a hard time. You know what we find a lot of that cider is college.
College. The closer you get to legal age, you find that there's much more. It's more prevalent. You know.
Yeah.
You don't usually go more than what 2 weekends without Dickens cider then.
No. And you find out that they make a number of different types of cider too.
Flavors, if you will.
Yep.
It's pretty good.
So you got away with that.
There was no blowback for that at all. That little bit, huh?
No, we're talking about cider. Look, it's a company named Dickens, and then they made a cider.
I see.
Yep.
All right, there you go. That's brilliant.
Thanks, man.
All right, I think that's probably the show. It's been an odd show. It's been your typical pre-holiday show, I think would be the term I'd use.
Yeah.
Also kind
I'm
of a,
sorry if
hey,
there
listen,
wasn't
face
a whole
it,
lot of
as we do this show, like the two sides are like deciding the fate of the season. So there's a certain sort of staring in the abyss quality to the show. Hopefully, listen, here are two things I want to say before we go. By the way, I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Merrick here of Sportsnet. By the way, for 2 minutes in the box today on Hockey Central, a really quick plug. Send in your you can send them to me at Jeff Merrick. Questions for Doug McLean and Brad May. So the best questions make the 2 minutes in the box segment tonight. Your Twitter name could be on the TV on the Sportsnet tonight. Yeah, I know.
Wowzy, whoa.
Dream big, folks. Dream big.
Two things. First off, if you're listening to this in the car, either tonight, Wednesday, or during Turkey Day, or over the weekend, please drive safely. I'm sure that that's not a problem, considering you won't be driving all that fast in bumper-to-bumper traffic, depending on where you live. But there you go. So everybody arrive safely, and everybody have a good time on Thanksgiving, and gorge yourself with delicious foods, and kiss your mom and all that good stuff. The other thing is, Leahy and I will be in attendance this Saturday night in Atlantic City, New Jersey, for the Operation Hattrick charity game. Flyers, Rangers, Marty's going to be there. I think I saw that Alfredson's going to be there. Bunch of NHL players coming together trying to raise money for Hurricane Sandy victims here in the Garden State and up in New York and other parts. So it's at I believe it's Boardwalk Hall, but it's like the only rink that's in Atlantic City. So details, I think, are on the Operation Hattrick Facebook page. And Leahy and I will be there doing some work and then checking it out. And then maybe we'll find our way over to Caesars afterwards and roll them bones, as it were. It might have to happen. So there you go. So that's Saturday night, me and Leahy. If you see us, say hey. And also we'll probably try to talk to a bunch of you guys while we're there, too, to get your thoughts on the lockout and all that stuff.
what Greg is trying to say is if you see him in Leahy, buy them booze. Because if you think you can bribe them with alcohol, you're 100% correct. Is that not what you're saying?
What I'm trying to say is that Leahy and I will be in Atlantic City, which means that you won't have to buy us booze because that's how they keep you in Atlantic City.
That's right.
He's bringing you the booze. Oh, look, a tray with something on it for me. Here's a chip, lady. Thanks. That's how it works.
We're not trying to put a man on the moon here, are we? We're not trying to put a man on the moon. It's pretty simple.
You may find me at the craps table. You probably will find me at the blackjack table. I can't tell you for how long, though, because, well, sometimes things go well and sometimes they
either
don't.
Go really well or really poor. Okay,
or they go sideways real quick. Oh, yeah.
You know what's great about, I'm just checking out Robot Jeff Merrick, too, and he's like, and even, like, Katie Baker is jumping in on the stories that I repeat. Katie Baker, ooh, do that. Why don't you go tell your grandfather who fought in the war that you want to quit hockey one? It's my David Clarkson pet story. Exterminate Guelph? What's all that about, Wish? Oh,
it's hilarious. I kind of made you a Dalek. I don't know what to tell you. All right, everybody.
That was good.
Thank you so much. Oh, Jeff Peppers writes in, is 2 Minutes in the Box brought to you by Dick Insider?
Love you guys. I may try not to slide that one on the program tonight. Brought to you by Dick Insider. It's good cider,
yes,
folks. Enjoy
do.
It. Sip liberally this weekend from the...
all right, with, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to go.
Company.
As we end the podcast today, we end with the ominous words from Chris Johnston.
Uh-oh.
The meeting is over. All right, now we wait. We'll talk to you. Hey, no show Friday, by the way, for the holiday, and we'll see you on Monday. All right, talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.